Although that is a use case. All right, we are recording. So we're not typically dealing ab initio structure determination. XFIL beam time is scarce. You only get it a couple times a year for most groups. It's concentrated. There's only a few days and they're all right packed next to each other, and it's fast. You get 12 hours on and then 12 hours off. Sometimes it's 24 hours continuous or longer, and it's all data all the time, and you prepare months in advance. And so because of that, the feedback needs to be very fast. So what are the data processing goals for an XFIL scientist during the data collection? So the first goal is to scale up the processing to match the speed of the experiment. So I'm going to show a couple different scales to demonstrate what we've been doing at XFELS. So at LCLS, we oftentimes run on a rheonics detector, and we run at 20 hertz, 20 cycles per second, 20 images per second. And this can generate 6 images in 5 minutes. Now, we like the rheonics. It's got a nice dynamic range. It's got a lot of pixels, but it doesn't run as fast as the beam. The beam can run at 120 hertz, but it has enough advantages that we do a lot of experiments on it. So let's call 6,000 images in 5 minutes a little square. So if we ran at the rate that the beam can deliver, the CSPAD had 120 hertz, this detector called the CSPAD, we could collect 36,000 images in 5 minutes. And that would look like this. So what we recently did at the European XFIL is we scaled up much, much faster. So this was, we were running at 2000 hertz on a detector called the AGIPD detector. 600,000 images collected in 5 minutes. This is an entirely different scale of problem. It's a file system problem. It's a computer I/O problem. It's a deployment problem. It's a database problem. Delivering all this data and its metadata processing that fast. And this isn't even as fast as it can go. It has right now a max speed of 3,500 hertz or 900,000 images in 5 minutes. So the first goal, scale up. The next goal is to remember that we're trying to answer biological questions. What we want to do is to deliver electron density maps like this. This is a photosystem 2 experiment where we were able to show some difference density. We want to be able to deliver fully merged processed density maps to scientists as fast as possible so that they can tune the instrument and the experiment to their needs. We need to provide fast feedback on a variety of aspects of the experiment to be able to do this. We need to be able to do per image metrics, like did the beam hit any solvent at all? Was there a crystal in the solvent? Did that crystal index, and was that crystal a good crystal? We need to be able to figure out all that stuff all at once and synthesize that information. And then globally, we need to look at non-isomorphism in the unit cells from all the individual crystals. We need to know how complete and how good the resolution is on our data. We need to be able to deliver this kind of fast feedback at a glance, at speed, and have it be recoverable later. We want to do all of this work using FAIR principles. So FAIR, this is the paper from 2016, findable, accessible, interoperable, reusable. So the data needs to be able to be discovered by machines or by people and accessed according to whatever user policies are appropriate. The data needs to be interchangeable between lots of different software packages. And then decades later, it should be able to be reused. So the data that we generate needs to be according to these FAIR principles. We're going to be doing this today using Nexus. We have used the Nexus file format at a variety of XFILs now all over the planet. We've done it at SwissFIL on the Jungfrau 16M detector, at the European XFIL on the AGIPT detector, and at the Korean XFIL on the Jungfrau 4M detector. In each case, we have created Nexus files that conform to a format that allows them to be interoperable between lots of different software packages. And this work is described in this paper. This paper is really the reference for the session, at least for my talk, I mean. And it's Bernstein 2020, gold standard. Finally, we need to be able to organize all of this information into many, many different data sets. So this is an example experiment from 2018, at the end of 2018. This was at LCLS. And here we had a big collaboration and we were just processing lots and lots and lots and lots of data sets. By the time the experiment was over, we had processed tens and tens of thousands of images, and we had merged them all into over 50 different data sets to high resolution, different mixing conditions, different enzymes, and so forth. So this was over 4 hours running at 20 to 30 hertz, nearly 600,000 total indexed images, right? Some of them out to 1.3 angstrom resolution. Now this number is very funny, isn't it? This was over 4 days. This is the difference between running at 20 to 30 hertz and running at 2 kilohertz, because this is the same number of images that you would get in 5 minutes at the European XFIL. So we need to be able to organize huge amounts of data and all of its metadata to be able, so the scientists can keep track of what's happening. Okay, so the goals, real-time statistics, to know about hit rates and things, real-time electron density maps. We want to be able to deliver organization for the metadata. We want to do this all using FAIR principles, and we want to run at kilohertz speeds, okay? So this is the software package that our group has been using to do this. It's called ccwx.xvil. The GUI. The GUI is about 4 or 5 years old now. We've used it at lots of different XFILs. It's built on DIALS. Here's the reference, 2018. And then this newsletter article describes how the GUI works and how you can run it. It's a full serial crystallographic workflow. So each image, we import it, meaning we understand its metadata. We run spot finding on it. We index it, integrate it, scale it, post-refine it. Then we merge it, we can refine it using phoenix.refine and then upload it to a Google Drive folder. And so if I am a scientist and I've been waiting for my data to be processed, I get refined PDB files in a Google Drive folder as the data is being collected. We organize this over, we monitor, this is all happens automatically using monitoring over many data sets, massive multiprocessing on the biggest computing clusters on the planet. And it's all organized using a MySQL backend that allows scaling the Hertz regime. This is what it looks like. So this is an example of the XFIL GUI. What you see here is runs. So run is a single continuous amount of time where you're collecting data, maybe 5 minutes. So what we do is, this is the metadata organization that I was describing. We tag the runs based on whatever tags you want, like Instagram. So in this case, it's all thermolysin data, but maybe we could tag a run as bad and not include it. So this is how we organize it. And then as the data is submitted to the cluster and it's processed, each image is logged individually into a database. And this, and then the client here queries the database back and retrieves all of the metadata into a plot that looks like this. So let me go into it. So each dot represents one image. The height of the dot off of, so for this plot, the height of the dot is how many spots are on that image. And it's blue if it indexed and gray if it didn't, right? So at a glance, we can see that we're getting, you know, anywhere from 300 to even up to 1,000 of spots on each image, that we're indexing a lot of them, but that there are still some images that we can't index, and those images have lots of spots on them. Maybe there are too many lattices on the image. Right? And then all this indexing stopped. Why did the indexing stop? We can look at the next plot. These are indexing rates. So the green line is the solvent rate. So how often are we hitting the droplets? The blue line is the indexing rate and the pink line is the multiple lattice rate. And we can see the solvent fell off. So it's not a problem of us stopping being able to index, it's just the drops all went away. And so forth. This is the quality of the data, and there's some statistics. So at a glance, you can see a lot about what's going on in the experiment. We can track non-isomorphism. We're finding this to be more and more important the more different samples we do. Serial crystallographic data, it oftentimes splits into multiple isoforms like this, or it can be even be twinned in lots of different and interesting ways. Like this case, this is pseudo-mirohedral twinning. So this is clustering the data on the fly into a hexagonal group and a monoclinic group. This monoclinic group, though, is pseudomerohedrally twinned. You can see it's got 282 and 286 in its A and its C axes. And so some images are misindexed in the other direction. And so we have to sort that out using some kind, well, it's called the Brehm-Dieterichs algorithm. I can tell you about that if you're interested. But we cluster this on the fly, and the user picks which cluster they want to use. Okay, so that's kind of how the GUI is organized, and it works great. How do we assay how well the GUI is performing on whatever computing cluster that we have available, right? And how many computing cores do we need to actually do the work? So recently, our group has been using these plots here. We call them computational weather plots. Each dot is, again, one image. The x-axis is the time at which that image was processed, wall time. And then the y-axis is which rank, in other words, which process. In this case, I was running using, this was a 20 hertz Raonic experiment processed at NERSC. We were running with over 200 cores. And we can see that it's pretty randomly distributed, right? You know, how's the weather today? Well, things don't seem to be clumping up. It doesn't really seem to be an issue. So this is a good weather plot here. So in this case, we were having like 5 seconds per miss per hit and 1 second per miss. Here, the green dots are the hits. So you can look at this and say, okay, things look randomly distributed. There's no gaps. There's no banding. There's no striations, which would indicate some kind of IO contention or something. And so this is very useful. I'm going to show several of these. Okay, so I've mentioned NERSC a few times. I want to call attention to this paper that just is now in preprint by Johannes. And in this paper, we walk through how we do the data processing at LCLS coupled with NERSC at very fast speeds. So the way this works is we acquire the data gets stored on a spinning disk, and then it gets transferred across the bay. So from LCLS in Stanford across the bay to Berkeley at NERSC and stored on some nodes. And then the GUI, which is configured here by users running at NERSC, interacts with the MySQL database, and then the GUI submits jobs to run on the supercomputer here known as Cori. This works very well, and we can keep up at 20 hertz, no problem. 120 hertz is fine as well. Okay, so now we get into the meat of it. We were processing at the European SFL. We had 2 5-day experiments separated by a month, right? We collected over these experiments 600 terabytes of data, over 354 runs, about half of the total data had protein in it, a bit more. We were running here at 2 kilohertz, not 3.5, 600,000 images per, and we had access to a lot of computing power. This was a real richness. We had 96 nodes between 80 and 144 cores per node to try and keep up with this data processing. So during the first week experiment, we focused on the command line processing, and the second week on the GUI integration. So just building and deploying the software to be able to run at these speeds without talking about any optimization of the IO or anything was difficult. So on the Maxwell cluster at DAISY, I first tried to build, and this was again with big collaboration, using Conda. So OpenMPI and HDF5 libraries. Didn't work at all. I attempted to use other pre-built Maxwell MPI libraries. Those didn't work. I tried to build my own MPI library, and that didn't work. So the reason I'm describing this is to note that each supercomputing facility is different, and they're so different, right? And you need a different version of MPI with a different library, with a different HDF5, and it all has to be compatible with itself. And it's so hard that it's oftentimes, as an outsider coming in, you really need to get help. So in this case, we got local Maxwell MPI networking expert Frank Schulensen, and he gave us a specific GCC build of Python 3 with OpenMPI and an MPI-enabled library. We used a virtual environment with pip to install our dependencies. We built CC2BX with some linking adjustments, and we used InfiniBand over this UCX protocol. This was a all of this was a requirement for us to be able to do our work, and it worked. I think I'm very helpful. We're very glad that Frank was able to help us out. So we did some early profiling. This is a very simple test. The only thing we did here was we read each frame, in this case from 900,000 image data set. And then from each frame, we just added up all the pixels. We weren't doing any indexing or integration or any other processing. We were just adding up all the pixels just to simulate having done something. So how fast can we read the data? All right. And as you increase the number of cores, the wall time goes down. And this is what you want, right? So with more cores, the wall time is a lot lower. The supercomputer is working. The problem is that it's not going down fast enough. And in fact, it is tapping out. So if you look here at the other plot, this is the core hertz. In other words, how fast is each individual core going? In that case, as you increase the total number of cores, each core starts slowing down. And that's because of file I/O in this particular case. And so how did we fix it? Well, we fixed it using a very stupid, simple trick that I'm still surprised worked. And we just cut the HDFI files up into multiple sections. It's a procedure called subfiling. And apparently it's really common in HDFI land. So we have a 600,000 image data set example here. You just cut it up into smaller data sets. You run eight separate jobs, each one of which running on eight nodes with a smaller file, 50,000 images each. And now things just go a lot faster, right? In fact, this is what the weather plot looks like in this case. So this ran for a bit over 5 minutes. This was only on like one or two nodes. We were normally using eight nodes, which brings it down below 5 minutes. And things are okay. There's still banding patterns here. These bands indicate times when the cluster just kind of grinds to a halt and stops, and it's just waiting for file IO and nothing's happening. So there's still more work to be done. During the experiment, we were reading data, a total amount of data between us and the people calibrating the HDFI data. We were running at 175 gigabytes per second. That was like the facility. That's how fast we were reading the data. 5 minutes. Thank you, Herbert. Okay, so that was the first week. The first week we got to the point where we could process data faster than 2 kilohertz to be able to keep up with the data processing. Right. For the second week, we tried to add the XFIL GUI. And we immediately hit a huge problem and it just didn't work at all. So this is what the weather plot looked like. When we just filled the cluster, all 96 nodes up with data, what was happening is that when the queue was full, we found huge delays in MySQL. MySQL would just grind to a halt. And that's what these gaps are. All the X's here is just because I caught this plot in the middle of processing. It would take over an hour to log into the database 50,000 images from a 5 minute run, which is no good, but it was solvable. And this is just by restructuring the MySQL commands using transactions. So you take all the individual MySQL statements, instead of doing them one at a time, you batch them all together in a transaction, and this solved the problem. So you could take 50,000 images, right? And you could log them in 0.07 seconds using a single MySQL query comprising 130,000 lines. So this solved the problem completely. We're able to run the XFIL GUI using MySQL on the cluster at speed. So there's still further work to be done. This is processing data, including everything, you know, indexing and integration and so forth. The number of cores, as the number of cores goes up, the wall time goes down, which is what we want. But you can see that we are still having the total amount of processing speed, the total processing speed per core is still going down. So I don't know how to fix this yet. Right now, we don't need to fix it. So if we use the whole cluster using eight jobs, eight cores on 12 jobs total, you take this number and you multiply it all out, you get a total processing rate of 9.4 kilohertz, right? So if we use the whole cluster and we use subfiling, we can run not only at speed, but we've got room to grow at these hit rates and at this at this configuration. But if but it is still scaling, starting to scale poorly if we go more than that. Probably we need to do something with MPI as we read the data itself, but we need like an HDFI expert to help us with that. Okay, so one or two last little bits. I wanted to mention a bit about how we're using Nexus and FAIR principles. Again, there's the paper. This is what the AGIPD data looks like. It's multi-panel. It's a they're big image. They're, this is 1K by 1K total, and lots of panels. This is how the data are organized into the HDFI file. It looks a bit like a Windows registry or a file system or something. The point is that the data is hierarchically organized. And down to where you start getting axis transformations, it's like, this is what positions each individual module. You get these offsets and vectors and so forth. The point is that this all generated programmatically. And we essentially generate these Nexus, call them master files for each run. So fully automated pipeline, all the way up to uploading the data into Google Drive, and it's ready to scale to up to even higher rep rate XFELs that are coming online. Again, we've used that at every XFEL facility on lots of detectors, the EPICs, the MCCD, MPCCD, the Jungfrau's Rayonix, supports LSF, SGE, SLURM, HD Condor, Docker, and Shifter for auto submission scripts. It's being used at Diamond Light Source on Beamline I-24. Tian Kun's been working a lot on that. And yeah, we can deliver, like at NERSC, we can deliver a fully merged data set in 5 minutes, total turnaround from when they turn the stop to collecting data. Okay, with that, that's XFEL at LBL. So my boss, Nick, we have Ashmit, who's done a lot of work on the GUI, and then Elise and Derek and Dan are more recent additions, and they've been around for a little while now, and they're super great. We're glad to have them. It's a massive collaboration, especially again, I want to point out all the people at the European XFEL that helped us. They really bent over backwards to make sure that we had lots of computer access, and we collaborated with them for quite a bit of work. Nexus has also been worked on by Philip Leonarski, I think, who's on the call, for the SwissFEL, for the Jungfrau data. That's one of the focuses of the gold standard paper. My Zoom background this time is not Black Lotus from Magic the Gathering. It is an Azurius city from Magic the Gathering instead. Thought I'd change it up a bit. Okay, and there's some references. The newsletter and the Bernstein paper and the Blaschke paper, along with some links. Okay, I did it, 25 minutes. I'll take questions.
Hold on, Aaron. I'm gonna start with the first question.
Okay.
It sounds like for MPI, we actually need the equivalent of a FAIR standard to stop driving people nuts with not being able to basically move their job to different facilities.
So it's such a good question, and I have no idea what the answer is. I do know that there are some Python packages out there that try to do, okay, so there's two problems, right? There's job submission. So LSF, SLURM, SGE, whatever the job submission is. And then there's MPI itself running on the cluster, right? And if I'm a supercomputing facility, I'm going to hire a lot of people to solve all of these processes, all of these problems, right? And like computer scientists, and I'm going to staff out a supercomputing facility, provide lots of technical support and documentation, right? This is what NERSC has done, right? But if I'm an XFEL facility, I've got a beamline to build. And so it's a lot harder for them. And so what we're seeing is that the best results are when XFELs collaborate with supercomputing facilities like Maxwell and the European XFEL, right? At the Korean XFEL, they're collaborating with a supercomputer called Keisti, right? And so this is great because it's the best of both worlds. I don't know that there's any kind of gold MPI standard coming, because a lot of it really is. I mean, this stuff I mentioned with InfiniBand, right? That was very specific to running on the Maxwell cluster, would not be at all applicable. But anyway, I mean, that's our job to figure it out, right? So if I'm a data scientist, if I'm a a protein crystallographer just wanting to collect data, I'm really hoping that somebody else will solve these problems for me.
Yeah. More questions. Aaron, that was a very fine talk.
Oh, thank you. Oscar. A yeah, hit it.
Oscar,
hey, thanks. That's very nice talk here. So just about the Nexus adherence in this. So you mentioned around the European XFL, Swiss FEL, and Paul XFEL. But how are things with LCLS and the Nexus data and such?
There's no adoption of Nexus at LCLS or of HDF5. They're on XTC streams, and they made the decision to stay on XTC streams.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
All right. I think you people have a minute and a half for a short break. And then we'll move to the next talk, which is by me. I'm going to talk about MX raw data formats and the gold standard.
All right. Thanks for the opportunity to speak, Herbert.
My pleasure. Okay. So we have something we need to do, and it's painful. Andreas Foster is no longer with us. And he will be sorely missed. He was the driving force behind having a gold standard. I thought it was impossible. We could never get people to agree. And he did it. So we owe our thanks to Andreas for having done that. Okay.